Welcome to episode number 27 of the Board Game OK podcast, recorded in freezing Helsinki, Finland. I'm your co-host Jonas, and with me is my co-host Luis.
Hello everyone.
Today we will be talking about reviewing reviews. We will talk reviews in general, and what do we want to do with our reviews here on this podcast. So, a little bit background to this topic. I've been writing some Board Game Geek reviews, as any Board Game Geek user can do, and I have really enjoyed the activity. In addition to writing my reviews, now I look more at what other people are writing in their reviews, just to kind of compare where is the, I don't want to say competition, but a little bit about competition. You know, if there's a review that got more thumbs up than my review, I want to see that, okay, what did that review do differently?
Mm-hmm.
Now, as I look at different reviews, I have noticed that I have quite a few opinions about reviews. There are plenty of reviews that I just feel that, well, I don't want to read this at all, or I feel that this doesn't really bring any value to the general commentary about the game.
Mm-hmm.
And additional context to today's episode. So this is just two people talking to me, and I'm not going to name them. But from these two people, I've heard that, hey, our main topics here on this podcast, they are really interesting. And I have to agree with them. When I edit our episodes, the topics are the parts where I'm actually smiling when editing. Because I'm thinking that, hey, that was a fun thing Luis said. And that was an even more fun thing that I said after that. But when I edit the episode, the reviews are the parts where I'm constantly feeling that, hey, we could do better here. Mm-hmm. And when we started this podcast, me and you, Luis, we discussed that, hey, we want to kind of get better episode by episode. And we want to kind of every now and then discuss maybe the meta of our podcast. You know, what do we want to do differently? So today, I thought that maybe we could dissect the art of reviewing and maybe discuss what will be the future of reviews in this podcast. And to avoid keeping things too abstract, we will be using Wingspan as our case example. So today we will discuss how we feel Wingspan should be reviewed. Maybe in the process we end up also reviewing Wingspan, but we will first and foremost discuss how Wingspan should be reviewed. What do you think about this, Luis? Are you excited?
I am quite excited about this. I think this is going to be a very interesting topic, and hopefully after this discussion, we'll end up having a better idea of what we want the reviews to be here in the podcast, and maybe also more consolidated / homogenized approach to reviewing things that will help at least me do a better job at doing reviews.
A little bit about Wingspan. So yeah. Wingspan has over 1 million sold copies. I wonder if it has hit that 2 million threshold already. But a couple of years back, it was already 1 million copies sold. So I'm assuming many listeners might have played Wingspan, which makes for a nice game to discuss at length and kind of the different parts of the game and how to go about reviewing it, as you, the listener, might know about the topic that we are discussing. Now, often with board game reviews, there is the problem and both the, you know, the not the problem, but also the opportunity that you have not played the game before.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a problem when you haven't played it before and you don't really know what are the reviewers even talking about. You don't really get the full picture of the game. And it's an opportunity when you get excited about a game that you never even heard about. Now, where do we start, Luis? I feel that any review, most of the time, starts with, do they actually start with the rules or just a quick general overview of what does one do in the game? How would you start reviewing Wingspan?
So specifically Wingspan, not
specifically
not
Wingspan. And I mean, you can, of course, extend to general, or if you want to start from general and then go to Wingspan, feel free. But at some point,
yeah,
you have to discuss Wingspan.
Should we talk about like basics of a review? Like not so much like the how do you start reviewing Wingspan, but like maybe the meta information that you should give in a review? Do you think it's, or is that something you have later in the episode?
It's not coming out later. So are you talking about who is the designer?
Yeah, like I was thinking specifically about Wingspan, like which I think besides the fact that it's, you mentioned it, like that it's a game that many people have played. So hopefully most listeners will have an idea of what we're talking about. Not all of them, but maybe most. I think it's an interesting because it's a game that has been praised for several, like the art has been praised. It also, like the publisher gets mentioned a lot when mentioning Wingspan. So it's like, It made me think like, is it worth mentioning the publisher in reviews, or at least when you give information about a podcast, about a board game? Because we were talking about like, what is the review for? Like, or we're going to probably talk about later, like what's the aim of the review? And in that sense, I think not always, but at least in particular with Wingspan, it's interesting to mention at least the art. And therefore, it would be interesting to mention the artist, which is not always the case, but the artist. Obviously, the designer is, I think, something that you should always mention, because it will give you an idea of like maybe the pedigree of the game design or like...
Well, how does it give the idea? Because I understand naming the designer if you have then something to add to that, saying that, hey, this is by Elizabeth Hargrave, this game. This is Elizabeth Hargrave's first big release. This is the game she is known for in the board game industry. And for the artist, I could say, hey, the artist by Beth Sobel. And this seemed to be Beth Sobel's breakthrough.
Exactly. And that's my point. It's like, now people... Like, I don't think before this game, well, I'm not sure, but at least Beth Sobel is somebody that I hear a lot about now. When people talk about a game and they say Beth Sobel, it's like, art by Beth Sobel. Ooh, then this is art worth checking out.
Yeah.
I mean, is that worth something in the review? I don't know. But for example, Wingspan, it's beautiful. Like, I think the cards themselves are a big plus of the game. A big, maybe not enjoyable about the mechanics, but something that if you introduce the game to someone, it will draw attention. People will appreciate the game more just because it has this art rather than it has just random doodles of birds in them or generic.
Sure,
right?
Sure. So, yeah. But you know, what if the artist would have been unnamed? What if this would be a mass market game without a credited designer on the game box, without credited artists?
See, but that's my point.
Wouldn't we still comment on the art? Wouldn't we still comment on the mechanics?
Yes, we would. But then it's like, I would imagine that there would be a comment or a side note of like, unfortunately, we don't know who designed this game. Mm-hmm. Or unfortunately, we don't know who made this beautiful art.
Yeah.
So in that case, it's like, artist is not something we normally mention on a review or at least when talking about a game. But there are games where maybe it's worth talking about because the art is particularly special. So I agree with you that it's like, if there's something to say, but what I found interesting about this example is that there is something to say in Wingspan about the artist. Where maybe other times it's not, unless the artist is specifically famous. Ian O'Toole, Beth Sobel, etc. Right?
Yeah. So I personally like to name the designer and the artist with games when I have then something to add to it. If I don't have something to add to it afterwards, I don't really care. And I know a lot of people don't like hearing me say that I don't really care who designed it particularly.
Yeah.
Because hey, these are dear products of someone's love and time and affection. And this comes from, or this whole domain of board games is a place where we praise designers.
Yeah.
And you want to make a name for yourself.
Yeah.
And the way you make a name for yourself is that people keep repeating your names when games are mentioned. So I know some people would want me to say that, hey, this is by Elizabeth Hargrave.
So don't you think you have the responsibility towards allocating, how do you say, credit to the designer when you're mentioning the game?
Oh, absolutely. And I, you know what? If the board game industry wouldn't be in this habit of crediting designers, putting the designer's name on the box in the hobby board games, if it would not have this thing going on, which it clearly has, I mean, the games that don't have credited artists are not hobby board games generally. If that would not be the case, then I think I would name the designers to kind of push the industry towards, you know, putting the people's names on the boxes. But since that's not a problem, I don't care. I feel that we have solved this issue a long time ago. Whether I name the designers or not is not going to affect anything.
So you don't think you should?
I don't think I need to if I don't feel like it.
Well, when would you feel like? That's my point. Like when you have something to say. But
exactly.
What is it,
when do I have something to say?
What is it that like, is it just because the designer is like a famous designer? Is that what you have? So like if it's Rainer Knizia, would you mention Rainer Knizia?
Oh, absolutely.
But maybe Rainer Knizia has a not great game and you're reviewing one of the not so great games with Rainer Knizia. What's the point of saying? Is it like a selling point?
I think it adds context to it. There is this idea of what does a Rainer Knizia game feel like? And many people it's enough. I can kind of paint at least 20% of the game to you by saying that it's by Rainer Knizia. So you already know, like, aha, it's going to have relatively light rules overhead.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to have interaction.
Mm-hmm.
It's not going to be Wingspan, for sure.
Yeah.
So there, Rainer Knizia, just by two words, I can already communicate quite a lot of what's coming up.
Okay, let's talk about Wingspan adjacent games, like other designs by Elizabeth Hargrave.
Yeah.
For example, I do not know. I think Mariposas is one.
Yeah.
Wolves is another one. Oh, I don't remember exactly. But my point is, I have not played any other game by Elizabeth Hargrave, I don't think.
Same here.
Therefore, would you claim that it's worthless to say, if you're reviewing a new game by Elizabeth Hargrave, it would be pointless to say, hey, this is by Elizabeth Hargrave? Because it's like, the only game that we have referenced is Wingspan, and we have neither been interested nor maybe heard so many great things about new games from Elizabeth Hargrave.
Yeah, so I would still mention Elizabeth Hargrave because so many people have played Wingspan. So they have already interacted with one game from this designer. And I don't think you would disagree with me if I say that games clearly have the signatures of the designers that have designed them. I mean, if you would play Wingspan, and then I would tell you that, hey, did you know this game, by the way, is from Friedemann Friese?
Mm-hmm.
Wouldn't you go, what?
Yeah,
that's kind of crazy.
Yeah.
Or if I would say Rainer Knizia, you would say, no. You're trying to trick me.
Yeah.
And therefore, if there's a new game and it's from Elizabeth Hargrave, I would mention it because I know there's going to be a lot of people who know Wingspan and therefore know Elizabeth Hargrave and then might be already interested in whatever she's putting out next if they have enjoyed Wingspan. So it's just me telling like, hey, here is one more new game by the designer of Wingspan. So yeah, I could shorten all of my ramblings here by saying me saying that this game is by Elizabeth Hargrave, this new game, is the same as me saying this new game is by the designer of Wingspan.
Mm-hmm.
And then it would be just weird to not mention Elizabeth Hargrave as well, right?
Yeah.
Like, why would
then
I just
like,
be
then
like
why wouldn't
designer
you just
Wingspan?
Mention the designer always? Because either you have something to say by mentioning that it's their first design, or somebody could have played their games before if it's not their first design.
Yeah, it's just, I don't know. It's really, it's one of those things that it's not super important to me. And therefore, if I don't feel it's important or I just don't feel like saying it, I just might not say it. But if for example, if we would want to install the policy here that we always say the designer name, I have no objections.
Yeah.
Yeah. How do you feel about that? Do you feel that we should have such a policy?
I think we should have a policy of always saying the designer game.
Sure.
What about year? What about
year?
Publisher?
No, year absolute. Year, I don't know. I think it's enough to say that, hey, this is a new game. Doesn't really matter if it was released 2025 or 2026, now that we are recording in 2026. If it's from 2002, I think it's worth mentioning.
That it's an old game.
That it's an old game.
Yeah.
And then if it's still good.
Yeah.
It's kind of one of those cool things to notice that, hey, back in 2002, they were putting out bangers.
Yeah. So what about a game like Wingspan 2019? Like neither too far away nor so close. What would you say? Would you even not mention it? Like it's a game.
Yeah. Again, if I don't feel that it adds anything particularly, I just might not mention it. If there would be a policy that we mention both the designer and the year, then again, I have no objections.
Yeah, I don't think we necessarily need to mention the year, but I think most of the time it provides context of what you're about to say, kind of. So, I mean, I don't need to have it as a policy.
Yeah.
At least. Designer, yes. Publisher, if it provides context, so no policy.
Yes, publisher, absolutely, if it provides context.
Same as artists, I guess.
Yeah, and the thing with the publishers is that publishers will change for the same game.
That is true.
So, for publisher, I mean, again, Stonemaier Games, here in this context, I would mention it's the Stonemaier game because Stonemaier Games have a good
reputation
in terms of components
what I think
and production.
Yeah, that's what I think.
Yeah.
As well, like, if it makes sense, it makes sense.
Yeah. And again, Stonemaier Games, not only do they have a good reputation when it comes to production, they have a style of game they keep putting out.
Yeah.
If I say it's a Stonemaier game, it means that the interaction is not going to make you feel bad.
Mm.
It's not going to be a feel-bad game. Okay, so are we done with the meta?
Yes, thank you. We spent a lot of time in the meta, but I think I wanted to start with that.
Okay, so now we have Wingspan from 2019 by Elizabeth Hargrave. art by Beth Sobel. There are other artists named here as well. And yeah, this is why I don't want to list all the artists, because sometimes there's so many different artists and you don't know who drew one card and who was in charge of the big art theme and the vision, right?
Yeah.
Published by Stonemaier Games.
All right. So what else would Wingspan be important to mention? Or what else would be important to mention and review on Wingspan? The second thing after the meta is, I think for Wingspan specifically, I thought game mechanics.
Yeah, so you want to go straight into the kind of the rules.
More like the general overview of the mechanics.
Sure. So what do you mean by that?
Like what type of game is Wingspan? For example, if you go to Board Game Geek, I try to find like how is it categorized? And Board Game Geek mechanics suck. Like they're not good categorization, at least because they categorize mechanisms. Mm-hmm. But then they talk about dice rolling, for example, for Wingspan, which to me is like not at all important in Wingspan. Wingspan has two main, I think, mechanisms, which are engine building and set collection, I would claim.
Engine building and set collection. So we can come back to this later, little bit later. Set collection, I don't understand. I cannot pinpoint where is the set collection in Wingspan. Engine building, 100% agree. Mm-hmm. Now, when I was getting into the hobby and I heard the term engine building, for example, when Wingspan came out, people were talking about engine building, how it's an engine builder. I had no idea what people were talking about.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I think there is one of the first tricky parts in terms of reviewing board games. Mm-hmm. You want to use certain terms and mechanisms that are widely understood for the people who are deep in the hobby and, you know, use Board Game Geek and know all of these terms. So it's easy. Those are easy shorthands.
Yeah.
But then you don't know who won't understand those terms. And for those people, there's zero information, just a lot of confusion. Mm-hmm. It's an engine builder. So what does it mean?
Yeah.
I cannot stop there, right? I have to open it up a little bit.
No, you have to open it up.
So how would you explain engine building?
How do you explain engine building or how do you explain engine building for Wingspan?
In a review, would you just say that Wingspan is an engine builder?
No. Then I think, and this is the tricky part, because I tend to lose myself in the weeds of explaining mechanisms. I think I should do a better job at that. But by setting the preamble of like, what do you think are the main components of Wingspan, which I think, yes, there are many more, dice rolling and whatever, you can frame kind of like, okay, what makes this engine builder special? Or why do I believe it's a set collection game? And by explaining those two things, then I think you can also mention what makes this game different than other engine builders or other set collection games, and what makes this particular game stand out or not stand out.
Yeah, but would this be stuff that you would kind of
then explain
drip feed during the review, not all in the beginning to say that, hey, here's the unique twist of Wingspan. This is the value prop. This is the selling point.
I think for Wingspan in particular, the way I approached it, at least in my mind, was like mention this and then start explaining kind of a little bit how does the game works, which is a little bit of the rule explanation, which I'm partly thinking you disagree with because you have mentioned it before that maybe ruled explanation is not that good. But I think there's like, again, as with what we said about the publisher, as we said about the artist, like if it makes sense to understand the game a bit better on the review or on the overview or whatever, I think it makes sense to explain a little bit of the rules or how the mechanics work.
Absolutely. But let's still stay a little bit about this mechanism and first kind of categorizing Wingspan, if that's how we start by saying Wingspan is in this category.
Yeah.
I was thinking about how would I open up engine building. Mm-hmm. So maybe I would say Wingspan is an engine builder, meaning that when you start playing the game on your very first turns, you will get very little done. Mm-hmm. Your movements are going to be minuscule on that victory point tracker. Not that there is a victory point tracker on Wingspan. But by the end of the game, you are doing so much. You are getting points everywhere. You are laying eggs. You are gaining food. You are tucking cards under cards. Mm-hmm. And that's the engine builder feel that you get, right? Mm-hmm. Set collection. Why is Wingspan a set collection game? And before you even go into why is Wingspan a set collection game, let's also first talk about what is even set collection. Because if there's someone listening to this saying that, well, I didn't know what engine building is. And now you talked about how we need to open up engine builders. And now you're jumping straight into set collection without talking anything about what set collection is. Set collection, basic idea is that, hey, collect same type of cards or same type of things and gain points that way. Not necessarily same type of things, but there's some kind
of... collect something, like collect a set of things.
Collect a set. Collect sets.
But the thing is like, or maybe I'm misunderstanding, but like maybe it shouldn't be set collection, but collection. But the way I see it, it's like set collection games are games that would reward you for collecting sets of things. And the way I see Wingspan is like, it's a bunch of set collection point making strategies. That's what the game is all about, right?
Like, I have to stop you here. I think we are sounding like idiots because we just figured out that, hey, set collection means that you're collecting sets.
Yeah, exactly.
So
asking why is Wingspan set collection? Then I have to explain how Wingspan works.
But what is, you know, we can't just say set collection is collecting sets.
Yes,
so
it is.
What is set? So it's something you might have encountered a game where the game asks you to collect three cats that are all black.
Mm-hmm.
And if you collect three cats that are all black, you get 5 points.
Yeah, and if you collect four cats that are all black, you get 7 points instead.
Yeah, and if you collect one of each color of the cat, you get 10 points.
Yes.
So this is typical set collection.
Typical game mechanism called set collection.
Yep. Now,
about collecting sets.
Exactly. Now, I interrupted you.
Yes.
Please go continue.
So, and I think this is the gist of Wingspan. Like, every card has multiple different symbols / elements that affect maybe the game mechanics, but that at the end of the day are part of a different set, different set.
Yeah.
For example, you have birds that go into different habitats, and each bird can have multiple habitats or one habitat. You have birds that eat different things, and then each bird can eat one thing or multiple things. And then you can, at the end of the game, you will get points, and so on and so forth. You have like birds that have different type of nests, different number of eggs that they can put, different wingspan, which is the famous namesake of the game. So all of these would determine the point-making mechanism at the end, which there's two main ones, private point and public point allocation. And all of that is just set collection, right? Like all of that is like, hey,
the
have...
public points.
But also the private points. It's like, if
the private points are eggs. That's where you make the points.
No. Remember that you have the cards.
Oh, are you talking about the 2-point scoring cards?
Yes, because which you can get multiple points.
Hey, we need to park this discussion.
Okay.
Because we are like going straight into the rules. And where do you collect the points and how do you play the game?
That's my point. It's like...
But if you start at the start, then maybe we shouldn't even... What's your point? Like if you cannot say in the beginning that this is set collection, and not explain anything further about set collection, then is it just you don't say that, you don't drop those terms, or you say that, hey, this is set collection, I'll explain later what it's going to mean, or is it I mean,
it is a big set collection game. That's the main point of Wingspan.
Yeah. Okay. Well, the reason why I don't feel Wingspan is a set collection game, because I hear you with all of those symbols and the elements that are in the cards, and maybe they are technically part of set collection, and maybe there are people who refer to those things as set collections. But you have this same kind of mechanism, for example, in Terraforming Mars, where you have cards that they have tags, they have victory points, there's all types of information on specific cards. You know, these multi-use cards or whatever, what do you call these things?
Mm-hmm.
And then you have classic set collection games such as Coloretto, which are the complete opposite of it. And at least for me, whenever I hear something is a set collection game, I'm thinking Sushi Go level set collection at its most complex thing, meaning that, hey, you collect those three black cats and that's how you get points. Not this very kind of big variety of different symbols, big variety of different types of information that's available on cards, and then comboing those together, etc. Even though I do get that in your books, that might be a set collection.
Yes and no, but okay.
Okay, so we are kind of, somehow, we were able to put we agreed on one label for Wingspan, engine builder.
Yes, that's the only one we agreed.
Yeah.
And in the other one, you're wrong.
And is it now time then, after that, is it time to then dive into the game mechanics and rules?
Yes.
Yeah. Now, this is why I wanted to stop you earlier, as you were about to start explaining the different parts, like why is this set collection? How does this how do the points come from? Where do they come from? Because my question here is, how much do we even need to cover rules before we can start discussing how do we feel about the game? How does the game feel like to play? And just provide general opinions about the game itself. Now, I know the answer is not the whole rule book, right? Yeah. The answer is not we need to read the whole rule book out. The answer might be zero rules. I don't know. But there is this big dilemma with board games,
yeah,
right? How much do you do rules explanation so that you can, you know, continue your commentary from that?
Yeah.
Now, without you explaining how does each particular rule work,
yeah,
what do you think are the points that we would have to cover before we can start providing any type of actual commentary on Wingspan?
So it depends on what you want to achieve, right? Like if you want to, I think you can go straight to say, hey, I like it, I didn't like it, commentary of how these things feel.
Yeah.
But, and then within that commentary, you could then try to add explanation about how some mechanics work if you feel that's worth to your opinion or that would make your opinion clearer. But you don't have to. You can just be like, you can go straight in like, I didn't like this game because it felt bloated. I didn't like this game because it felt too low, too slow. But then again, like, what is that providing? Like, why is that review worth listening to?
Yeah, but that's another whole big point. Because what you just provided was examples of someone saying, giving some adjectives to describe a game and calling that a review. Instead of maybe diving deeper into what are the decisions that you're making in the game, which is not about the rules.
No, it's mechanisms, right?
It's highly linked to the mechanisms.
Yeah.
But
it's rules adjacent.
It is absolutely rules adjacent. But those things might not be apparent if you just read the rule book.
Yes.
That what is going to be the tough decisions that you need to make in the game? What is actually going to be the level of interaction? You can kind of maybe have an idea about it based on the rule book, mm-hmm, but you might notice that, aha, there was a level of interaction here that I did not expect. I'm having emotions that I did not expect. I was expecting a chill time. Now I'm sweating.
Mm-hmm.
Those kind of things. Now, in our podcast, mm-hmm, the way we do this stuff is that it's always one of us reviews a game when we review a, mm-hmm, game. So one of us starts discussing the game. And in all of our reviews, whether it's from me or whether it's from you, both of us, we always discuss rules at least a little bit,
mm-hmm,
before the other one gets to jump in.
Mm-hmm.
But you're saying that this wouldn't even have to be like this. Is this something that we could change in our podcast?
No. I see. I said that depends on what you want to achieve with the review.
Hey, we can actually, if that's the big question, maybe we could address that one first, even before we get to the rules, etc.
Yeah.
So what are the functions of reviews? I thought about this beforehand myself. I think reviews, board game reviews, they have two functions. And I want to hear your opinion about this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
The first function is to provide information for people so that they can know whether they want to buy or play this game. So this is your typical product review if you are looking, for example, for a new toaster. Mm-hmm. Now, I'm using the toaster example here because last year I read this book called How to Talk About Games, if I remember the name correctly, by some video game reviewer. This shows how much I'm interested in crediting people for their creative works. I can't remember the name of the author nor the book. The name is How to Talk About Video Games by Ian Bogost.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and Ian Bogost starts the whole book by this preface talking about toaster reviews on Amazon.
Mm-hmm.
When you go read a toaster review on Amazon,
yeah,
you would want to know, well, how well does this toaster toast my toast,
yeah,
or bread, right?
Yeah.
You're not interested in political commentary,
yeah,
or cultural commentary.
Yeah.
But then he goes on showing that, well, we could actually write a more cultural or a more thinky piece about a particular toaster,
uh-huh,
meaning that where does it fit in with your general appliances and just general trends and designs,
mm-hmm,
right? So function number one for board game reviews is this toaster review thing.
Yeah.
Doing this product review, do I want to buy or do I want to play this game?
Yeah.
Now, the second function that I feel board game reviews have is that they can provide something to a player's experience. They can provide a new viewpoint so that the next time you play the game, you look at the game differently, and therefore your experience is going to be different. You might feel more negatively or more positively, mm-hmm, about the game. The experience can go either way, but there is a change in your experience.
Mm-hmm.
I think this happens in real life, and I can use myself as an example.
Mm-hmm.
So when I first started maybe listening to some board game podcasts or something like that, I started noticing that, oh, some podcasters, they talk more about interaction in games.
Yeah.
And then I noticed that, oh yeah, I have certain games that have not so much interaction and some games that have more interaction.
Mm-hmm.
And there was this thing that sometimes I would play a game, such as Wingspan, mm-hmm. with a high player count. And I felt that there was some kind of magic missing mm-hmm. from that feeling. But then it was really fun to play that game with Chilla.
Yeah.
I mean, it's so obvious in hindsight that the thing was that it's the interaction that was missing.
Mm-hmm.
But it just kind of required someone to pinpoint the thing and someone to kind of explain how they view games and they view playing. And then that's changed completely how I view games and what type of enjoyment I get out of them. I still feel that these are my opinions.
Yeah.
It's just that, hey, there was a person in the world that was able to change how I view a thing. So those are the two main functions of board game reviews,
about interaction.
In my opinion.
But for example, let's expand that interaction. So what happens if you have, do you have to play the game with multiple different player counts multiple different times in order to be able to give a review?
Hey,
so that you can,
Luis, we have to stay on one topic. We were talking about what is
reviews.
The goal of reviews.
Yeah.
Now you're moving into like, okay, well, how many times do you need to play a game? Let's find some kind of conclusion to this topic first. What's the purpose of a review? I provided what I think are my or like two possible goals of board game reviews. Do you agree with these goals, or do you feel that there's something else, or one of these goals is not really something that board game reviews should even aim at?
You're making this unfair because you're pushing your point and not allowing to discuss the nuance in those points. Now, the problem with those things is like, I don't know how to say it. I get the feeling that then you have to be very specific about what's your audience and who are you making the review for. Because then you have to kind of cater your language and the way you're talking about the game to somebody that you know is like, okay, this is the review for kind of this particular type of person that is going to be listening to. And in that case, if our reviews are specifically for people that are hobby sport gamers, like people that are in the hobby as much as we two are, and that's who our podcast is for, and that's who are most of our listeners, eventually we have now fewer listeners than that, and most of them are our friends, then yeah, I guess like we want to let them know. Yeah, I guess those two things, yeah, make sense.
No disagreement?
Not necessarily, no.
Okay, hey, then let's move to your question of, well, how many times do we need to play the game, etc. So let's talk about what happens even before we start reviewing the game, right?
Yeah.
This is before the podcast. It's a big question of like, well, do you need to play the game 10 times at all the different player counts, try out all the different strategies to fully understand whether this game is good or not? What do you think?
I don't know if whether the game is good or not, but in order to be able to give a good subjective opinion that would fulfill the second mission of the reviews that you mentioned, I think you have to.
Oh, the second mission meaning that provide a different viewpoint.
Yes.
No, but it does not mean it has to be a viewpoint about balance issues, for example. It, for example, can be a viewpoint of, hey, you know what? It's in that book, in that How to Talk About Video Games. Bogus gives this one example from another reviewer or mm-hmm. another commentator. I don't even know if they are a reviewer mm-hmm. or just a general cultural commentator
mm-hmm.
about Tetris
mm-hmm.
and how I think the thing that she said was that Tetris reminds us of the everyday work stress of American work life, where nothing gets ever fully completed, but tasks keep coming.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this review or this kind of commentary doesn't really make sense if you think about Tetris being a game that came from the Soviet Union,
mm-hmm.
you know, a non-capitalist system. It mm-hmm. wasn't made for Americans. It wasn't made to simulate American work life.
Yeah.
And also, of course, you know, this type of work life happens all around the world. It's just not, you know, specifically tied to America.
Mm-hmm.
But when I read that thing, I thought that, you know what, that's a pretty good description. what playing Tetris feels like and how sometimes work life feels like.
Yeah.
And now I think the next time I'm playing Tetris, I will be thinking about that comment. And I will be thinking a little bit more about, well, what is this game kind of forcing me to do? And therefore, I am having a different experience than I would have had had I not read that particular commentary about the game. And you could make that commentary by just playing Tetris one
time. If you happen to get that experience, right? But if you had just played Wingspan once with the 5-player count, you would be like, hey, I don't know what was, I think I understood that you felt that there was no interaction in the game, right? So you would be like, hey, this game has zero interaction. It made me feel, meh, playing. And that's my point. That's the point I'm trying to make, where like, then you have a view that is kind of wrong, but it's your view. So for you, it's true. That's how you felt.
Yeah.
But then somebody else that is listening or trying to explore whether should I buy Wingspan or not because of the level of interaction would be like, no. Or they would be like, what the hell is this person talking about? That's not at all how Wingspan feels.
Yeah. Hey, okay. Yeah, I'm with you 100%. I think where the confusion happened was that two functions that I listed was the first one was about, is this toaster good? Yeah. Does it work as a toaster?
Yeah.
Is this a toaster you want to buy? And the second one being, well, what are toasters? What does this toaster tell about other toasters? Will this toaster change your point of view in life? And I think the stuff that you said about that, you know, you need to play the game multiple times to understand it, I think it goes into the category of the first mission of providing a proper evaluation whether this toaster can toast bread well. Right?
Okay. Yeah.
Doesn't it?
Yeah, I guess.
Isn't that, like, because I'm thinking that, or I'm feeling that you're hinting at, you know, balance issues. So if I would play Wingspan for the first time and say that, hey, this game is unbalanced, you should not buy it. You should not play it. It's completely unbalanced.
That is a hot take. And it can be a good review. Like, hey, this is the first thing I played. If you're only thinking about playing Wingspan with two people once, which is many board games do that, right? Like they play a board game only once and then they have their shelf of shame that will never play board games ever again. Or you're thinking about introducing this game for your group of coworkers or whatever.
Yeah.
Don't. Like the first experience of everyone will suck. And I think that's still valuable. It has to be caveated, I think.
Exactly.
And it has to be mentioned. But I think that does not necessarily invalidate a good potential board game review.
Me neither. I don't think it invalidates it at all. And I think there is value in first impressions, impression reviews.
Yeah.
But I think it is good to provide that context that, hey, this is a first impression based on one game.
Yes.
Because if I think the commentary is completely different. If I say, I played 500 games of Wingspan.
Yeah.
And I have some issues about the balance of the game.
Mm-hmm.
Versus, I just played Wingspan yesterday. Yeah. And I have some issues about the balance.
Yeah.
I think you will be, how would I say, your ears would be a little bit perked up for the person who played it 500 times versus the fool who played it one time and now knows exactly everything that's wrong about Wingspan in terms of balance and strategies, etc.
But do you feel that it's not worth making those type of reviews where you can be like, hey, I played it once, I don't want to play it ever again?
I think there's worth, and I have made a couple of those reviews on BGG as well.
Okay.
I label them as first impressions.
Okay.
I try to write only positive first impressions reviews, because if I would write a negative review and someone would, you know, challenge me on that point, I don't know if I would be able to defend myself. And I feel that I can easily end up retracting a lot of the things I've said.
Yeah.
Now, I wrote a first impressions review for Forestry.
Mm-hmm.
And the parts that I was critical about were mainly about the theme.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think the theme is going to change no matter how many times I play the game. It's still going to be the same theme. And therefore, if someone would challenge me on those things, I'm okay, because I can kind of, I can argue or provide my argument in a different way in the case that I was not able to provide it in a clear way in the first place.
Hmm.
But if someone would say that, hey, you are saying that Forestry is random and you played it for one time, well, I played it 10 times and I feel that actually if you do this thing and that thing, then it doesn't work. And all I can say is that, well, you're probably right.
But I don't want to play it 10 times.
But then it's, why do I say it's random? If I'm not able to, if I can just change my mind as soon as someone says to me that it's actually not random, I played it 10 times and I can tell you it's not random. So why not? Why even say it in the first place? That's my kind of caveat for first impression reviews. So is it enough for us to just agree on the fact that if you have played it one time, it's something that you want to mention in the review and something it will influence what type of commentary you will provide. And if you have played it many times, you will probably dive more deeply into strategies because you are more comfortable discussing those things because you have more maybe data behind your opinions. Is there anything else you want to mention? What about those player counts? Because that's an annoying thing. These board game publishers, they want many people to buy their games. Some people came with only two people. Some people came with five people every time. And therefore, Wingspan plays from two to five. It even plays solo for those solo players out there. So it caters for everyone. So if you're at store looking for the next game to buy, and if you don't look at reviews and you just look at the player count, hey, the higher the player count or the wider the player count gap, the better, isn't it? Now, we both know that playing Wingspan at two-player versus five-player is a very different experience, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Does one need to play all of the player counts before reviewing Wingspan?
I don't think you need to play four.
Yeah, I think four is easy to skip. Play solo, play two-player, play three-player, skip four-player, play five-player, and then you are ready to review.
Don't play solo.
Like, as a reviewer, for us,
I think solo is, unless a game is, unless you want to discuss the solo version of the game, I think solo is a different type of recommendation or maybe a different type of game in many cases. I think there's channels and podcasts that like dedicated to specifically solo gamers. I think it's one of those things, like if it's worth mentioning it, if you enjoyed it, then for sure you can add it to your review as a, like maybe as a like little tagline. By the way, I enjoy the solo version as well. But I don't think this is something that, in general, for multiplayer games, you need to consider in the review.
Yep. So in our case of Wingspan, I can now say that I have played Wingspan as two-player, and I have played Wingspan three-player. I think I have... Actually, you know what? I think I played all player counts except that solo. One-player, two-player, three-player, four-player. Same. And unfortunately, I have played five-player game of Wingspan.
Yeah.
Because I didn't know better. I was the one who said that, hey, we're five players. Let's play Wingspan.
Yeah.
I was an idiot.
Yeah, yeah. Same. To be honest, I also don't enjoy it at five. Let's put it there.
So, a little bit more about the player counts. There's this trick taker, Fearless, that I got from Essen.
Okay.
We played it. I think we played a five-player game. Then I played a five-player game afterwards. I wasn't really feeling the game.
Okay.
And then I thought that, well, what if I try three-player?
Yeah.
You know, kind of the complete opposite of the player count. So I tried a three-player just to kind of get the experience.
Yeah.
So that's something I do sometimes with player counts. Yeah. If I feel the game has too much chaos, then I try it with smaller player counts. If I feel that there's not enough happening in the game, then I'm eager to try higher player counts. Other than that, I have zero issues about not trying all the player counts because it's easy to kind of point the finger at the publisher if you have a bad experience playing a game five times at five player count and thinking that there's not enough interaction here or it doesn't work at five players.
Yeah, and there's, I think, also many games that maybe you don't even want, like they are for two, but you don't want to play with two. You want to play only with three or four.
Yeah.
Like, you just don't feel like, you don't feel like, okay, I don't feel like I want to play that game that I've already experienced at three or four with only two people. I don't think it would play well. It might, you might be completely wrong, right? But it's definitely, I don't think it's mandatory for the review to play at all the player counts. However, I think the risk of not doing it is that then you could get people saying, with whatever you say in a review, you could get people saying, that's because you didn't play that two, which is the best player count for this game. And then you can stand corrected and be like, hey, okay, you know what? Yes, I played it 100 times at only five players and it sucked every time. But now you're telling me three, like messed up, but I still don't feel like revisiting it.
Yeah. No, Wingspan. So if I would say that, hey, if I would write a positive review about Wingspan and then someone would come into the comments and say that, hey, we played it with our friends. We were four players. I don't really feel that there's a game for four players. I would add to that saying like, hey, oh, well, I guess I forgot to say that this is a two-player only game for me. If you didn't like it at four players, I can see how,
yeah,
why it's like that. But in this player count, in this circumstance that I described in the review, I really enjoyed the game.
Yes.
It's an easy kind of comment to address.
But do you have to describe all of the circumstances?
Well, you have to describe them at some point, maybe, or like some level. Oh, yeah. Well, don't have to, because so many reviewers leave them out, which I, okay, that's, I hate that. I hate it when I read a review or listen to a review.
Yeah.
And I have no idea how many times they played it.
Yeah.
With who did they play it, in what kind of circumstance.
Yeah. So you think that's a mandatory information in a review? Like,
I like to keep it in my reviews because I so much hate not hearing it in other reviews.
Okay. Yeah, I think that's fair. I think it's fair to say. And then the second question is like, okay, what's the minimum number that you would say, okay, that's a valid review and not the first takes or initial impressions or whatever? Like 3?
Oh, how many times do you have to play? So I like the number 3 here.
Yeah.
Meaning the first game, it's always a learning game.
Yeah.
You're just kind of discovering the game. Then the second game, you kind of already know what's happening. And
yeah,
in the third game, you can then explore the game more.
Yeah.
And I feel that with most of the games, by the third game, I already have a pretty solid understanding of what's happening here, what's fun, what's not fun.
See, if we were making our living out of reviewing board games, and this was like a sustainable business model for us, and we were like the most famous podcast getting, I think it would be a bit more of an important thing to do, to like maybe play multiple player counts, even all of the player counts, play multiple times the game, so that we would have the best chance at discovering the good and the bad, so that we could give a more objective subjective review. Wouldn't you say so?
Well, I think there's the balance of how much time do you have and
exactly
how many games do you want to experience.
Exactly. So
and
if you were a professional, yeah, then you would have more time and then you could justify more. Because I think I find it hard, especially games that I don't like, but I still maybe want to talk about them. Then like I find it really hard to be like, to justify giving some of my amateur board game podcaster time/lifetime to be like, yeah, I need to play that game 2 more times or 3 more times or whatever in order to review it. And then I'd rather not review it, even though I thought there's something I can say about the game. I think there's something worth mentioning about hey, this game I didn't particularly enjoy and I've played it only 2 times. I don't feel like playing it the third time just to be able to say this game sucks. But I feel like I have enough board game experience to be able to compare or to maybe identify like what was missing in that game for me to play it a third time or a fourth time or a fifth time. And then you might not get to the balance of like, oh, this game feels random because you didn't play it 10 times to see all of the different aspects or different strategies that balance the randomness of the game. I'm like, well, I don't want to play it 10 times. Then it's a game not worth playing and not worth buying, in my opinion.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess the random example here doesn't work for me in the sense that that's not usually a problem I have with games so much. So therefore, it's not that I need to try a couple more times to see that, hey, is it really so that one particular strategy doesn't work or there's an overpowered strategy or it's the game is just like pure randomness? I don't need to get those playing counts to get that experience. I need to get those playing counts to just understand how does this game feel in general.
Yeah.
Okay, so we have now played it couple times, maybe more times. We have sat down. We have discussed the meta of Wingspan, the name, the release date, the artist and designer. And guess what, Luis?
Yeah,
we're about to hit the 1 hour mark in this episode.
Okay,
which means this will be a part two. There will be a part two to this episode. We're not gonna get to the kind of like the big conclusion because we have just talked about the most superficial parts.
Really?
So as a recap, we have today discussed how much should we play the game? What player counts should we play the game at? Should we name the designer? Which I think took probably 20 minutes of the time discussing when to name the designer, when not to name the designer, when to name the publisher, when not to name the publisher. We have discussed kind of the first lines of the review.
Yeah.
But we have not even touched upon the limits of the podcast format. We have not discussed how long should the review take. We didn't even get to the parts of, well, what rules do we need to go through in Wingspan in order to provide good commentary upon, right? Because we started doing that And then we immediately went into the question of like, okay, well, why do we even have to write a review? Mm-hmm. Or, well, not why do we have to write a review? Well,
why do we do reviews?
Why do we do reviews? What's the value a listener can get out of a review?
Mm-hmm.
Next time, I hope we can get an answer to the question of like how much rules. And I can give you kind of a little bit to think about for next time. I want to get an exact number of within what time limit should we kind of have covered the rules for the review. And let's actually expand that. How long should the review even be in our podcast? Then should we both have played it? That's another question in order to kind of think about like what kind of commentary do we want to have for the games?
Yeah.
And then the big question of then what commentary do we even want to have for Wingspan? What are the important things that we want to say about it? Can we say more than just adjectives? Can we say more than say that Wingspan is boring or Wingspan is fun or Wingspan is interesting or Wingspan is uninteresting? Mm-hmm. Is there more that we can talk about it?
Yeah.
And then, hey, you know what? I have a surprise for you for next part.
Okay.
I want to get back to the rating scale. I want to discuss whether we should also have some kind of rating
we have,
at the end of that review.
We have one type of rating which we use, which we should use every time. It's the official Board Game OK rating discussed in the first episodes, which we should use.
Have you re-listened to that episode?
I have, yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Yes.
But like,
so was it an official Board Game OK podcast or was it me interviewing you about what you think is the best way to rate games?
Both.
Ah, okay. Maybe I missed that part. I didn't realize that we were also making a decision to discuss or like the decision about what is the best way for us to provide ratings for games.
Yeah.
Hey, there's so much to talk about in the next part.
Okay.
So, Luis, don't be sad. I can see it in your eyes. You're sad that, hey, what is there going to be a second part?
Yeah.
Hey, thank you so much for listening. We want to thank you for your time. Our next episode airs in 2 weeks. In the meantime, you can visit boardgameok.com for more information about the show.
Bye-bye, okay?